spend my life.
Oh my God, I feel like I did a Russian invasion special. I feel bad. Because I invited you as a comedian. In the end, I treat you as the box ticking person on BBC Morning. I feel bad.
No, because also, see, the thing about it is that you shouldn't feel bad because it's just an easier conversation to have. By the way, I don't know much about that. I've spoken to English people who make me feel ashamed how much they know versus how much I know, but then they'll defer to my position. And I'm like, why are you deferring to my position? You've clearly done this a lot more than I have. They're like, no, but you're local.
So it's not likely you'll ever have a comedy special like My Perilous Journey Out of Ukraine.
if I do that special, just come and slap me.
Welcome to Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese comedian, Quan Wen. I interview comedians who perform English stand-up comedy but who are not native English speakers, or they can have a very distinct British regional accent. This podcast is all about comedy, about accent, about languages, and about the comedy technique. So stay tuned if you're interested. A minority language suffering threat. Only because you personally don't care about languages, so you don't think that's quite a big deal. But for the Welsh people, it's pretty much a very big deal. So it says more about it. And funny enough, Brian Logan from Guardian, I think he's Scottish.
Oh, okay.
If you really think about it, it's really sad. Like, he's so internalized the whole...
Yeah. I mean, look, I think I've got like a bit of internalized whatever
yes,
that is.
Yes, I do. I think so.
I for sure have it. In terms of just from... Like, mate, I'm a Ukrainian that doesn't speak Ukrainian. I only speak Russian.
Oh, you have to repeat that again later. So,
yeah.
Okay. Oh, shit. I now have to pretend I don't know about that. Right. This will be enough time. Let's start it. Should I do my own 3-2-1? That's really king. Okay. Hello, welcome back to another episode of Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm going to go straight into introducing my guest today. My guest is the very first Ukrainian comedian on this podcast. You thought, wow, the country was invaded in January. Was it January or February?
February
2022. It took you quite a while. That's true. But at the same time, there aren't really a lot of Ukrainian comedians on the British comedy circuit. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right. There's popping up more and more, but, you know, it's easier to talk about.
When you say popping up more and more, you have a really sort of conflicted, complex reaction on your face.
Oh, yeah. Like,
it's nice to have more of my brothers and sister at the same time. You guys are diluting my niche, bro. Oh, so,
dude, for sure. For sure. For me, it's like, oh, damn it, another one.
Okay, so I'm going to welcome my guest today. That is Dmitry Bakanov.
Yeah, there you go. Well done. Thank you. Actually, my name is technically Dmitry Bakanov.
Bakanov?
Yeah, the accent is different. Like, it's a second syllable that you have to hit.
I am very honored you're willing to correct my pronunciation. Because I watch quite a few clips. I don't think you really... Like, lots of guests I have stop caring about how their names are pronounced. They just think that it's a fight they are never going to win.
Wait, not only that... I only corrected your pronunciation on this podcast because it's a language-based podcast.
Yes, and I love
that. I say my name in a British way.
Yeah.
Once, there's a comedian called Sasha Ellen. I don't know if you've ever met her. She's Russian, but she speaks like English perfectly. Like, you wouldn't even know she's Russian. And she introduced me by saying my name properly. I was confused. When I was walking on stage, I was going like, I haven't heard my name said properly in years, and I don't say it properly myself because it kind of cuts the ear for the audience. I prefer to do it in the English way because I live here.
And it's more likely they will spell your name correctly to find you if they
yes.
manage to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's Bakanov, is that what you're
yeah,
saying?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So it's a second syllable is stressed. Yeah.
I will only go as far. I wouldn't learn how to write them in the Cyrillic alphabet. So before I dive into my usual first question, I do have another question, which I'm going to pretend I don't know the answer of because you just let it out casually in our pre-recording warm-up. Dmitry, you're originally from Kherson. That's in
yes.
the east of Ukraine. That is like the
south.
So we're talking about the Russian occupation, and Kherson mm-hmm. is pretty much on the front line.
Yeah.
And also, Kherson is where... Prior to the war, there was a stronger support for affinity to the Russian culture in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that in Ukraine, people are fluent quite often in two languages, Ukrainian and Russian. And your most fluent language would be?
Russian.
Yeah. We have to address the elephant in there. because some Ukrainians will be wondering.
No, they'll know.
Yeah. And also you actually come from a mixed family. Your father is Russian and your mom is Ukrainian. Is
yes.
that right? Okay.
Yeah.
So not just a fictional made up for comedy set. It's actually true.
Yeah.
Okay. And how you joke about your father. My father is a good Russian. He's dead. Is that a joke or is that true?
This is true. He's dead.
Yeah. Okay, so that, okay. I'm sorry to bring this up.
No, it's fine. Basically, everything in my set is pretty much true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Ukraine is a really big country and he has sort of very complex situation or like a social understanding when it comes to language, identity, especially after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I want you to know which side I'm on because I'm not calling a special military operation. I call it an invasion, so it should be self-evident. This is my usual question. Do you think when you speak English that you have an accent?
Not anymore. And it's a weird one because I live in London. When I speak to foreigners, they'll think I'm English or local. But then when I speak to English people, they're like, dude, you have such a strong accent. Like, you're clearly foreign. You know, it's the observer effect. It depends who I'm interacting with.
This is what I've said on this podcast many times before. It's similar to the beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Mm. The accent is in the ears of the listener. Do those British people, when they say that, are they able to pinpoint or locate where you're actually from?
A lot of them, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So even for, I don't sense any sort of East European tone or sound, but can they tell?
Yeah, often.
Really?
Yeah. I'm also amazed, you know. I'm very like, oh damn, okay, you could recognize it, but they're like, yeah. Because sometimes in my set I'll say like, you can tell from my accent I've been here for a long time. Or so, okay, before I used to say you could tell by my lack of accent.
And some of them will look at it and say, dude, what are you talking about?
I'd have people come up to me and be
like, you're delusional.
Yeah, they're like, listen, you've done well, but I know you're foreign. And I'm like, okay, sorry, my bad.
So they thought you were being ironic or
yeah. Yeah.
But I think you are, for me as a non-native English speaker, I feel like you are like a lab animal, you know, like a guinea pig. He was genetically modified, but he was only 90% complete. So it's not quite, I can tell you're from somewhere else, international, not from an English speaking country, but I cannot tell where your mother tongue is. That's what I feel. And I think a lot of non-English speakers, I'm guessing maybe even North Americans can't pinpoint because they are not that familiar.
No, yeah, they wouldn't. No, a lot of North Americans think I sound more British. Obviously not the proper PR accent and stuff like that. But
RP.
Still, RP, yes.
PR is like proportional representation.
Yeah. RP, that's it. RP, that's a renounced pronunciation.
I think
right?
You have a similar...
Received pronunciation.
Yes, received pronunciation. Yeah. You're probably more like Bridget Jones. I know that's a weird analogy, but your accent is kind of like, okay, sounds weird when I say it, like artificially constructed. So it could be like an international school accent.
Yeah.
It could be like a diplomat, military personnel's children's accent. It's clearly following a specific kind of standard English, but not quite, just a little bit short of getting there. But it's pretty close.
Yeah, and like people that learned English, I learned a lot of it watching TV, which is mostly American TV. So it's a mix of that. Plus it's a bit of
mix. What did you watch mostly?
Like Friends. Friends is like one of the easiest things to learn English from.
Yeah, I remember reading an article. It says that the impact of Friends is that the younger generation that grew up with it use the word so a lot more often.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like prior to that, they don't use it so ubiquitously. It's like, that's so good, so that as an adverb. This is going too far. So I have to roll it back. When I was going through your clips, I thought you still have this dignity as an East European, so you don't try to overdo the accent. Then I heard another podcast you've been on. The fact is you can't do the accent anymore. It's not that you don't want to do it. Yeah, it's that you are not capable of doing it.
Dude, I'm so bad with accents. I cannot do accents to save my life. I can't sing. I can't really control my voice that well. I don't know if you heard me say it in that podcast, but it's like I tried when I started comedy and people were like, oh, play up your Eastern Europeanness. Because it's one of the things like when you start in comedy, they're like, oh, play up your USP, whatever it is. So people are lazy when they give you that advice as well. So they just look at you. They go like, you're foreign. Talk about that and be more foreign. So I did like a 5-minute set trying to be more Eastern European. Got no laughter. Came off, went to my friends and they were like, dude, why were you pretending to be Indian? And I was like, okay, cool. I'm never trying that again. It was that bad. Can't do accents.
And I'm guessing the reason you can't really
I would say English came late in your life, because before coming here, you didn't really learn or didn't really speak much English, right?
No.
But you came at this, I think it's a critical in this context. You came at the crucial age of 11. Mm-hmm. And that's where your mother tongue was supposed to develop into a more literal adult-like conversation of fluency. But you learn English, I wouldn't say late, but not as early as like fluent in terms of a native tongue.
Yeah.
It's early enough, but it's not early for like... So if you learn it at a certain age, I think it will be easy to achieve what they call like the accentless fluency,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And then when you learn it after a certain age, however hard you try, you can always tell. 11 is that age where you kind of pause your native language to a degree. You mm-hmm. took on the second, but the second one, your accent will always kind of show. Is English a completely... foreign language to you? Maybe not, because I think it has fused partially into your system. But has it fused enough so that you'll be considered a native speaker? Also, not quite. And I say that is because when I was in primary school, lots of my classmates moved to America at the age of 10, 11, or 12. So these days, they're mostly Americans, in some cases, Australian and New Zealanders. So they would consider themselves to be Americans or Australian or Kiwi, but they always speak with a little hint of a Mandarin accent.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's I think if I really wanted to hide it completely, there are ways of achieving that. But
you don't feel that need to. It's no, like, I've done enough integration. That's it.
I don't care enough. I've got a good enough control of the language where I'll make fun of English people that don't know English as well as I do, right? At the point at which I can...
grammar, turns of phrases, even certain words pronunciation. And I always find it hilarious, but I stop correcting people when they couldn't distinguish between fewer and less.
Yeah. I tried to date a girl recently. She's an English girl, grew up in London. But literally, I thought at the beginning she was joking when in text messages, she didn't know the difference between your and your.
No, it's an epidemic.
I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a bit. And I kind of made fun of it. And she got a bit defensive. And before the therapy, I would have continued making fun of it. But because I've done therapy, I was like, okay, I'm going to just leave this alone. And then later on in conversations, whenever it would crop up, I could see there was literally a coin flip for her, whether she'd go for one or the other. And it made me sad because I kind of went, oh man, you're English and you don't know. It's the same thing as when I speak to somebody and they'll say something like, oh, we was.
Sometimes they say it's a London dialect thing though. So
there is that. I think it's one of the things that happens when you do have to consciously learn a language. You become a lot more pedantic, or at least I have, about the use of certain words. Mm-hmm. And I've had wild arguments with partners in the past about misusing a certain word, and then we'd get into a whole thing. And then, you know, then you look back on it and you go, why was that so important? But I think it's because when I misused
words... Did you say you broke up with girlfriend because of grammar?
I stopped seeing that girl because of the grammar, but...
Look, girl, you may be hot, but you're...
I know.
Lack of language sophistication is driving me.
Dude, I'm a comic. I dated before a girl for like over a year who was Italian, and she'd come over here to do a master's. Mm. So she was a smart girl. She was doing a master's in English, but it wasn't her first language. As a comic, it's not even as a comic, but I think it's more like I went into comedy because I like language so much. So I would do these turns of phrases that would just go straight over her head. She literally wouldn't register them. And to me, that was deflating. So I couldn't, it wasn't as enjoyable being in that relationship, because when I wanted to connect to somebody that I care about, obviously, I wasn't able to.
But do you not think when someone is very loose with language, they are probably more like, because they destroy and they construct, right? Mm-hmm. They're so loose of language, they'll come up with the idioms or turns of phrases not entirely correct. And that itself becomes funny.
It can
become
funny.
So this is how like Shakespeare created so many English words, because he was using the language in a very loose way.
Yes, there's a lot to be said for that. And I think I've read before that English is now one of the fastest developing languages because there are so many people abroad using it and often getting things wrong, but in a way that's still workable, because the whole world is using English thanks to the internet, or a large chunk of it. And because of that, there's so much input into it. There are so many evolutions. And that's why English is developing very, very quickly right now, faster than a lot of other languages. I don't know if that's true. That's just something I read somewhere, but it makes sense to me. However, because of my personal journey and my personal pedantry, I like to make sure that I'm using words very specifically.
Did you get beaten by like your English teacher? Or you went to a very severe boarding school?
No, mate, I'm ghetto. I went to a very ghetto school.
You went to a very ghetto school?
Very ghetto school, where nobody
evidenced by the fact he say the word girl, gale. He's been saying gale. I don't know if you know this. That's a London twang.
Yeah, it is a London thing. Yeah.
I only do gale when I watch Drag Race. No, Drag Race girl. But If you could do a perfect East European accent or passable East European accent, would you do it though?
Not anymore. I would have done it when I first started, and I felt that was the USP.
So you do agree there is an immediate effect. It does make the set stronger, more appealing instantly?
I don't think it's stronger or more appealing. I think it gives it a different character, which it's all very contextual, right? Mm. I think it can be great to begin with, and I think it can then be a thing that holds you back.
Right.
Because I think if you're doing that, you're a bit more of a caricature, especially if you're leaning into it.
Mm.
So I have a mate who's just, he stopped doing stand-up about a year ago now, but he was Russian. And it was interesting because...
Is it a bit?
Yeah. So yeah. There you go. Cool. Yeah, you've done your research. He's a great comic. He stopped because he just decided doesn't need it anymore, sort of thing. Because he has a strong Eastern European accent. He would be able to get away with wilder things on stage than I could, simply because people would put it down to, oh, you know, he's Eastern European, he doesn't know any better, so this is okay.
And the way he exaggerated, because even though he spoke with the accent in private, I think he amped it up on stage.
He did, yeah.
And he amped it up so much, people think that surely is a caricature.
Yeah, so they literally saw him as, you know, Borat or a version of Borat. So this guy can say whatever. And it's weird because then it's like it takes away his actual humanity. But they go like, no, but it's okay for him to like say this stuff about women or whatever because he doesn't know any better. Where actually is a very, very accomplished human being.
He did one joke which I really wanted to do, but he did it first.
Which one?
I always thought there is a similarity in the sound of Crimea and Crimea River. And I wanted to try it. I was never able to find, because I don't do many one-liners. Yeah. I don't know where to put it. And once I wanted to send the same gig with him, and he did it, I said, no. But now if I do it, it would be like I'm stealing from him.
Yeah.
So if you think about your thought process, even if you could, you wouldn't want to do that. Is it because you wanted to be less a caricature? You don't want any foreigners in the eyes of audience, or you just don't want to be taken seriously? Why would you not, if you really analyze and think about it? What's the reason you may not want to, even if you could?
It's down to my individual perception and relationship with comedy.
Mm.
I don't want all my comedy to come from the fact that I'm Eastern European. Mm. That's not a thing for me. And I don't view myself as that personally anyway. I don't kind of, oh, I live my life because like I'm like this, da, da, da. And I'm not trying to relate to people on that level. Just the way I see it is I kind of go like, oh man, I care about it as a person who's got their flaws and that's it. The accent and the personality of Eastern European then becomes almost a barrier to getting to my individual thinking process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the follow-up question, I hope, is not too personal, but if you think about the fact that you came here at such a young age, or 11,
mm-hmm.
and so you kind of lived a third of your life in Ukraine and then two-thirds of your life in the UK.
Yeah.
So would it also be difficult for you to lay claims on the Ukrainianness? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
Because you left early.
100%.
And you left when the Soviet Union just collapsed. That was a long time ago, and lots of things happened. And so many things happened in the last few years, almost like a decade has gone by just in the last few years. So your memory of Ukraine is a lot of what young Ukrainians do not necessarily know or experience in person.
They wouldn't. And also, this is one of the things that on a personal level, I don't like when comedians go like, oh, I'm from this country, so this means this. The reason I don't like it is because my memory, first of all, like I was born in 87, the Soviet Union collapsed in 91, so 4 years later. Like, so I was born technically in the Soviet Union. Then in 98, we left. But my knowledge of Ukraine isn't of Ukraine. It's only of Kherson, just the one specific town in that one moment in time, which was the 90s in the old Soviet bloc are known as the Wild West.
Yeah.
Because it was just wild. That's why my parents left, because it was just too wild. So yeah, I can't say like I'm Ukrainian. I've tried to date a Ukrainian girl. We were not getting along, as in terms of just culturally.
Well, the idea on the Ukrainian national identity, there can be some conflicts coming from that as well, I guess.
Well, yeah. Actually, there's been two girls over different times. But the first one was she came over when she was 15. But the difference was she very much so stayed in the Eastern European diaspora, whereas my family didn't. We just integrated and went to school, whatever. So I don't really have many Eastern European friends. Okay, 2 months into dating, she said to me, Dimitri, you're too...
God native.
Yeah, she's like, you're too European.
What did she mean by that? Fashion or the food you eat?
No. This was like approaches to life. Like, she really wanted me to pay for everything. And I was just like, listen, even if I wanted to, like, I can't afford it. I remember, because I was going on holiday, like, abroad with a friend to Vietnam.
I thought communism would make women more egalitarian. It's not as he.
So it kind of did. But what happened in the 90s in Ukraine, because it was the Wild West, there was a lot of indoctrination into get yourself a man that can support you because you don't know if tomorrow's coming. So you need a man that's got resources. So there was a lot of that. But again, this is that example, right? That's just that one individual. There's others. But I'm not saying it in a negative way, right? Because I remember, like, I had a holiday booked to Vietnam before we even met. And then she was like, you didn't invite me on the holiday. And I was like, if I invite you, I have to pay for you. She's like, well, of course, if you're inviting me. I go, like, I can't afford this holiday. I'm putting this on my credit card. Anyway, that's one side of things. The other side of things is, I remember I was staying at hers and I needed to leave the house at like 5 a.m. because I was traveling somewhere far. And she was like, oh, you have to leave at 5. I was like, yes, I'll get up at 4:45 and I'll just go. She's like, okay, I'm gonna set my alarm for 4:30. And I was like, why are you setting? You can. She's like, so I can wake up and make you a sandwich for you to go, like, on the train with. And I was like, I can just get a sandwich at the train station. What's up? She's like, no, I'm a woman. This is my responsibility. And I was like, listen, I don't know what slavery shit this is, but don't do any of that, please. But that's what I'm saying. So it's not just all take. There's a lot of give. This is what people don't get. Like, where there's like loads of guys who are like super sexist online and stuff nowadays. A lot of people don't understand that that sexism comes with a lot of responsibility. Like, I have those jokes now as well where I talk about, like, if you want your woman in the kitchen, like, you gotta buy her a kitchen. It's like,
the kitchen better has the kitchen island.
Yeah, exactly. But my point is, I don't claim to be Ukrainian. If anything, my identity is like immigrant.
You don't claim to be Ukrainian, but then after February 2022, you kind of have to address the elephant in the room.
Yeah, but there is no elephant for me to address. So I know for a fact that if I went on stage, especially when I host, I don't have to tell anyone I'm Ukrainian. Nobody cares. Mm. I find it funny when comics do say, like, oh my God, I have to address the fact that. It's like, no, you don't. Nobody knows. It's just a thing. You make it a big thing in your mind, so you're like, oh my God, it has to be addressed. No, it doesn't.
I kind of disagree with you here, though. I think it differs from city to city. So in London, it doesn't really matter. You can just say, I'm from the borough, I'm immigrant. You'll get away with it, right?
Yeah.
And Radu and I discussed it. Radu say he mentally had a chart. The bigger, the more liberal the place, the fewer he needs to do the admin on top to explain his accent.
Yeah.
And the more rural he goes, the longer he has to let them get used to his accent before he's able to come back to a neutral position to talk about whatever he wants to joke about.
Yeah.
But before that, he has to properly address that. I know you're thinking I'm Romanian, I have this Romanian accent, and I completely agree with him. I do think that just phonetically, they needed time to get used to it. And I think mentally, especially British, are very sensitive to accents and accent changes. I do think that maybe you don't have to say you're from Ukraine in London. You can kind of just say, I'm an immigrant, I'm not from here. But I do think in some other English towns, you have to say something about it. That's what I say. I disagree a little bit.
I get what you're saying. But I also, like, if you break those shows down into different types of shows, right? So if you break it down into a show where it's a comedy club versus you're going to a village hall and you're entertainment rather than stand-up.
That's a good point. Yeah, village hall and comedy club's not exactly the same.
Yeah, so any comedy club I go to, I can do it without addressing it. But if I'm in the village hall, that's different because they're not coming out for stand-up. They're coming out, that's the event that's happening there that week or that month.
Ah, I like the thinking. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, so for me there would be the differentiation.
So the comedy element is not indispensable. It just has to be something.
Yeah.
A reason to go out.
Exactly.
Do you not think, though, the reason you may be able to be exempt from explaining where you're from and your accent? Because fundamentally and objectively, your accent is very mild.
Well, like I said before, right? When I'm outside of London, British people will be like, well, it's not that mild.
Right? It's not that mild. But it's still a lot milder compared to Vlad, for example.
Yes. Yeah.
Can you imagine Vlad going off stage and never address his accent at all throughout the whole comedy set?
I understand.
Vlad, we love you.
Thing. Yeah, look, I understand. Listen, it's a completely common thing. It does happen with people that they have to address it. but I don't think you do every time.
Mm.
I just don't think you do. Sometimes, of course, if the audience is particularly rowdy or drunk or it's just a certain type of audience, maybe you have to say it. Like, there'll definitely be times when you have to. I also think it's just one of those things where it's been repeated so many times from one person to another that they feel they have to. I don't think so. Even like as an Eastern European, the country's like multicultural enough to be like, oh my God, like, you know, he's speaking with an Eastern European accent. Why is this happening? So now they'll be like, yeah, he's from Eastern Europe. That's fine. Do you know what I mean? So it's like people will figure that out straight away. A lot of these things of like address your accent, address your appearance, blah, 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 they stem from the early days of gigging. And they're like easy things to do jokes from. I say, for instance, Ian Stone, who's an amazing comedian, one of my favorites on the British circuit. I think he's just a genius. He would address the fact that he's Jewish and he's got like a very big nose and he would just, you know, address it at the start. But I've seen him do loads of sets, never ever talking about that aspect of his life or his face or his nose, whatever, because you can, you don't need to. Like when you're starting off in comedy, you kind of get given this rule and you go, okay, I'll do this forever now. And then you just don't need to.
That's a very good point, though. Interesting food of thought. We agree on there may be an issue. We identify the problem, but then we prescribe different medication. So we came up with different solution. And what you're saying is that it can be due to multiple reasons, but you haven't done a scientific research to see if I take out the control element, what is the key variable? And it could just be that you were not good enough, or it could be that instead of addressing your ethnicity, nationality, and your accent, you could just do jokes in a different way and you can solve the same problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Logically, that's absolutely, I think that's true.
And there's a lot of the placebo effect and stuff like that. But also, I think like a lot of acts don't want to give it up because it's their USP. You can do loads of jokes because you're X, right? So you're like, oh, I'm X, so I can say Y. And it's like, you can just say Y without explaining that you're X. But it takes a bit more nuance with the jokes. When I speak Russian, I have a strong Ukrainian accent.
You preempt my question. That was my next.
Yeah, so it was the reverse of that. For instance, my Ukrainian accent in Russian is as strong as a Scouse accent. The second I say two sentences and people are like, you're Ukrainian. And that's fine. But was he weird?
I thought these days they say Ukrainian is artificially constructed.
But I don't know the politics of that deep enough because I don't frankly care.
I say that it's because once I went to a job interview and the interviewer was Ukrainian. So I expressed my sorrow. That was before the invasion. But prior to the full invasion, Russian already sort of sponsored the fighters in eastern, the two regions, Luhansk and
Donetsk.
Yes. So I expressed my sympathy and she said, oh no, I'm like Russian Ukrainian. I think Ukrainian is an artificially constructed concept. And I just felt this interview just get very awkward. I haven't finished all the question on corporate responsibility.
Just in case
it's not clear, that is not my view. Okay, I'm fully on Ukrainian side. So you have a strong Ukrainian accent when you speak Russian, when you perform in Moscow. Yeah.
But not only that, my Ukrainian accent...
Do you not have a bit of English accent?
That's the thing. I also have that mixed in, right? Because essentially English is now my primary language and has been for a while. The sentence construction is different in Russian than it would be in English. So there's certain sentences which I essentially construct in an English way.
Do you get your cases wrong sometimes because you don't speak Russian very often?
My cases?
Like the declination at the end of the... Because I know Slavic languages are very complicated where you move the word in different position depending on the person, the ending has to change.
No. So that's fine with me. But it's just the sentence structure, it's off because it's kind of more anglicized. But I speak it so well, people don't understand why what they're hearing doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah. Some audience may be lost. I'll give you a very simple example. In English, you put what they call the temporal adverbs at the end of the sentence.
I don't know what that
is. Okay, so in English, you'll say, I'm going to the airport tomorrow.
Yeah.
In Mandarin, I would say, I tomorrow go to the airport. In German, you would say, I go tomorrow to the airport. If you don't say exactly in that order, people still understand you, but there's just something off.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yes. Yeah, so that's exactly what I just didn't have the... Well, the correct terms for it, yeah, because I just don't know them. Dude, I only learned what a pronoun is when it became very popular.
That's one people say that is the silver lining of the controversial debates. Like, everyone knows what a pronoun is in the English-speaking world.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So we covered all that, but the whole context changed in February 2022. You had a bit more jokes on you being Ukrainian because it was so in the news. Every day on BBC or on the news,
I read,
there's always a section on what's happening in Ukraine, on how the invasion has been pushed by Russia.
Yeah.
And now we are almost 3 years after the invasion. So the last 3 years, how has it changed you portray yourself as a comedian on stage because of the invasion of Russia in Ukraine?
One, it really helped my career.
Yeah.
Like a lot in terms of, because I just got to do loads of massive gigs. There were benefits for Ukrainian charities.
The fundraiser for Ukraine.
Fundraisers and stuff like that for Ukraine, which was great.
When I see some other Russian comedians do that gig, I'm like, is it to repent?
Yeah, kind of.
Is it like a guilt factor?
Yeah, there's a guilt factor. There's also like, hey, look at me, you know, I'm one of the good ones. But also it's just like, you can do that gig. It's still a nice gig to do, you know. You can do that gig without having any of that guilt as well. You know, you can just do it because like British comics are doing it because they're like,
were you asked to go on BBC Morning to talk about the invasion as a Ukrainian person?
No, I did some random thing on, I think it was like Channel 4 or 5. And then I did the headliners, which was on GB News.
Yeah.
But again, it's an interesting thing like where a few different producers got in touch with me for like Britain's Got Talent, because somebody gave them the brief of like, look for a Ukrainian guy, right? And then they would see my material and they'd be like, that's not for us. Because honestly, I could have done so much more if I just lent in and made my material like, oh, it's poor ass. And essentially, if I made it to me, not to somebody else, but to me, not funny, but more playing into the thing.
Can you give a more concrete example what you mean by playing into the thing? So the context is Ukraine now is invaded by Russia.
Mm-hmm.
The Western world had so much sympathy and kind of feel bad for neglecting Ukrainians' prior claim that we are under threat, things like that,
yeah.
Right? When you say as a comedian that performer, you could have leaned more into the thing. What do you mean by that?
I could have talked about, you know, the suffering that my family and friends are going through.
Portraying yourself as the victim.
Yeah. And also being that person that's like, that's the messenger for the country and kind of giving a moral stance and reminding people in the West that they could do more and they should do more and kind of bringing to them the suffering that's going on there from a personal perspective. So I could have done all of that. And somebody else, I'm sure, would have done really well with it and really meant it. But for me as a person, that's not what I find funny. What I found funny is to say that I don't really care about it and I'm enjoying the benefits of like extra gigs that I'm getting and stuff like that. I know how that sits and I understand how that sits, but that's just how I like to view it and how I like to present the comedy, you know?
Because like, your philosophy is more like irreverence.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't want to take anything way too seriously.
Yeah, I don't want to take stuff too seriously. And I also don't want to... Yeah, fine. I'll get on gigs because I'm Ukrainian. I understand that. But I don't want to then go on and lecture people in the audience that came out to a comedy show about...
You're not doing enough.
You're not doing enough.
Yeah.
It's like, if anything, it's not going to make them do anymore. I personally don't believe that. I've been lectured in audiences about Ukraine and about other things. And I was just like, can you stop this? Like, just continue the show that I came here to watch.
Okay. Just to give people a little bit more nuances, the whole context. Dimitri, I think he started performing comedy a year or two before me. But for whatever reason, we rarely gig together. We gig less than 5 times together,
yes,
I believe.
Yeah.
No, fewer. So I asked to see him again before this recording. In his joke, he talks about the Ukrainian war, and we are now more than 2 years into the war. So you can sense the overall Western society has a bit of apathy, a bit of, oh, we really should help Ukrainian more, but I really hate this inflation. I just hope the whole thing will go away.
Yeah.
The sort of simplistic thinking, and it's creeping out in the Western society.
Mm-hmm.
In this context, Dimitri's joke really worked. Like, yeah, but I'm not going to fight in a war. You joke about you do it like the British people. You basically just hide and you tweet or you talk about it. And that's the most you would do about it. I wonder, though, that joke will work now. Did you do the same joke 2 years ago when the war first started?
Yeah.
It was right after the invasion, you did a joke like that.
On the day of the invasion.
Did it work?
Yeah, it killed. Well, first of all, this is the second invasion, right? Yeah.
So the first one is Crimea, and after that, the separatists in Eastern
Ukraine. Was 7 years before.
2014, yeah.
So it was just an escalation of violence, right? But for me personally, the funny in comedy lies in allowing people to laugh at the thing almost guiltily, but be like, something relate. So dude, it's like, mate, frankly, like, I've helped people get out of Ukraine rather than serve in the army because, like, why? I don't know. Maybe I'm too old to be convinced to die for the motherland sort of thing. I'm just not that way inclined. I joked about that when Israel-Palestine first kicked off. Well, not first, but, you know,
this most recent one,
when that kicked off, like, I think 2 weeks into, I had a joke. I was like, listen, I don't know what side you're on, but mine depends on who I'm talking to. Like, it would crush. And people would come up to me after shows and be like, mate, that's...
Because your ethos is to help the audience channeling and release the dark thoughts they were too afraid of saying in public. This is almost like inappropriate, but they do think about this, right?
Yeah.
And that's what makes it funny.
I don't think it's necessarily like, oh, you're all thinking this, but I'm saying this.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's like, isn't it fun to play around with this idea? Or sometimes it's like, you know, it's okay. You don't have to. Because everyone's telling you that, like, you have to feel guilty about this and you have to feel guilty about that. It's like, do you? Or is it okay for you to be concerned about the rent that you have to pay this month rather than what's going on somewhere else that you don't really know about, but you all of a sudden have to have an opinion? For me, it's like, it's just allowing people to allow themselves off the hook, where it's like, yeah, you don't have to feel guilty about this massive geopolitical event that you have negligible influence on. You know, it's okay that you can worry about the rent.
I don't think you even have to mention you can worry about the rent as a reason to feel bad.
Yeah.
They don't have to if they don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm saying, it's like, you can continue to exist in your own life. Everyone's forcing you, like, you should care about this, you should care about that.
Dude,
for the first year after the Ukrainian invasion, honestly, I could see the audience's relief when I was like, yeah, I don't really care about the war. I could see their relief, because when I'd come on and be like, I'm Ukrainian, you could see people just be like, oh, I'm about to be lectured. And then I'd be like, oh, I don't really care about the war. And they'd be like, oh my God, this is just going to be jokes. Great.
But those audience, are they mostly non-Ukrainians, mostly British?
Well, British, and like, I perform all over the world. So I've
You done the same jokes to a crowd mostly Ukrainian
immigrants? I've done it
to a lot of
Ukrainians. I've done it where it's gone really well, and I've done it where people wanted to fight me. You know, I remember I was doing a gig in Vienna, and this guy, he really wanted to fight me. To be fair to him, he'd just come over like 2 days before. He just got out of Ukraine. This was like a man in his 50s. His city was bombed, and a bunch of his friends died because their apartment blocks got hit. And he was in a random place in Vienna with his daughter, because his daughter lived there. And they decided to go see some comedy because they saw a Ukrainian guy was on. And I was doing these irreverent jokes. He was, you know, he was calling me a traitor, blah, blah, blah. He wanted to fight with me. And I completely understand why that material wasn't for him. Yeah, of course. Sure, you're upset. You're not the audience for this. It's the same thing as, like, I would never say those things to him.
Just to hurt you.
Yeah, just to hurt him. Even just as a discussion, because I understand this person's gone through a traumatic thing. He's nowhere near ready to have that conversation. Even if he was, it's like, who am I to have that conversation? You know, I'm a persona on stage. That's a thing for the stage. Off stage, no. It's like, I'm not going to push somebody's buttons for no reason.
We are 2 years and a half since the war started.
It's over three.
Oh, it was
three February this year. Yeah, I've not corrected you before when you were saying it.
No, thank you for correcting us. 3 years and a half. I hope I can change that all retrospectively. Now I have this more specific question as a Taiwanese person or as a Taiwanese comedian. I look at the situation and I can fully see Taiwan can be just before February 2022. We don't know if anything's going to happen. And I can see if something happens, some stupid media may be approaching me just because I take
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
And they don't really care about what you think. They just need someone they can say is from Taiwan and want you to say what they want to hear.
Well, so it's in multiple levels. So actually with the first invasion of Ukraine, because I was already doing comedy by then, like, I literally had, it was like a BBC politics program that reached out to me, and they were like, hey, we'd like your take on it. And I go, based on what? And they were like, well, you know, like you're Ukrainian. But before bringing me on, they wanted to know my actual take. And I was like, well, this is my take. And they went, oh, no, cool, thanks. They actually didn't even say it. They were just like, oh, we'll move on to something. Mm. Right. So what they do is like they'll find people and they'll be like, give us your take. Oh, no, you don't fit the format of the show because we've already got somebody from that perspective. We want another perspective. And that's what they'll do. And it's okay. Listen, if Taiwan gets invaded, or if stuff with Taiwan really kicks off, there will be producers for multiple different shows that literally scroll through the internet looking for anyone who's Taiwan adjacent who they can bring on.
You have joked they're probably a bit on the nose for some Ukrainians.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying your job is not to lecture people. You hate it to be lectured. I agree with you on the broad principle, but I think my approach with you is slightly different though. I feel maybe my sense of my own country's victimhood is a bit stronger. But I also know people came to a comedy show for comedy. So the different compromise I make is like my ultimate priority was still to do propaganda for my own country. Mm-hmm. But I do it in a slightly funny way. So it's more digestible. It doesn't come across as condescending. But if you ask me deep down, yeah, I'm still playing that card because I want to do more to help my country maybe on the war front. I mean, I'll be a good fighter, but I can use comedy as a medium to achieve that. But I think you have a more, I treated the purpose of comedy as more dispensable. Comedy for me is more a tool. It's a means, not the end.
Yeah. Also, don't forget, like, your relationship to Taiwan is entirely different to my relationship to Ukraine.
Yes, that's what I want to know. So can we talk about this?
Sure. I don't like Ukraine.
Okay.
Like, as in, I don't mean it in a, like, I dislike Ukraine. Mm. I just mean, like, yeah, it's like, it's a country.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. That's it. Like, I like the food. I like some people that live there because they're my friends and family. But that's about it. I like it because I've got certain affinity to certain places where I grew up, nostalgia purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not like, oh my God, I'm going to go fight. That was never a consideration, not for a second.
Is it weird then for you to be addressed or labeled as the Ukrainian comedian Dmitry?
No, but that's just marketing.
It's just marketing.
It's just marketing. Like, I've had promoters say this to me. They're like, listen, if you're just British, I wouldn't be able to book you because I already have a straight white guy. But you're Ukrainian, so I can book you based on that. And so, like, lean into some Ukrainian jokes because you're giving us diversity. That's okay, cool. Call me the Ukrainian comedian. Gets me on the bill.
You don't have to do the accent, but it still serves as a marketing angle.
Yeah.
And it helped to progress your career slightly.
More than slightly. You know, it's helped people to know me. It's helped people to, like, just in the industry, just to because...
But it doesn't mean that you particularly owe this identity any debt in a sort of way. Does that...
Yeah, not as far as I'm concerned. There's no... Like, why do you want to help Taiwan? Because you care about the country or the people that live there?
I think both. But I also think it's because of what happens to Taiwan internationally. Quite often, people, after they leave Taiwan, they become more patriotic.
Yes, yeah, it often happens.
Yeah, maybe they go to a uni, they're in a class. For example, you have like International Day and someone say, I'd like to present my country, Taiwan. And the Chinese student would say, it's not even a country. You're nothing but a province. Or when I look at my podcast statistics and I see Taiwan and there'll be brackets, province of China. But I'm too lazy to migrate to another platform who doesn't have to do this kind of shit. But it all adds up. Little doses of passive aggressive reminder of, and I think that build out the strong the victimhood. When you feel you're part of that community, you feel a sense of that victimhood as well.
It makes sense. You see, I don't have any of those feelings about Ukraine. Also because, quite frankly, I don't have a good relationship with Ukraine. And it is kind of, you know, because of Russia, because of the Soviet Union, obviously because I grew up through the collapse of it all and stuff like that. So I understand that. But to me, as far as I've known, it's always been broken. And where people have said that we've got this prosperous future and stuff like that, they've often been politicians who are not actually acting for the best of the country or the people. They're just lining their own pockets because corruption is rife in Ukraine. So it's hard for me to get behind any of that. The individual people that I know, sure, I love those people. I care for them. I want them to live in safety and security in a country that they can prosper in. But that's how I feel about anyone anywhere that I know. So I don't feel like I have to go out and be evangelical about Ukrainians' situation and they're like, and it's standing in the world and stuff like that. It doesn't do much for me.
Yeah, now in this current political climate, if you go out and say, let's joke about the corruption in Ukraine, it's not really an easy sell.
it's not at all. It's weird because it's like, you become automatically like a right wing person who's like trying to sabotage Ukrainians as pro-Russia. And it's like, so definitely not pro any of that. You know, it's horrific. You know, Kherson, the city I'm from, is the one that got taken over by Russia and then taken back. But that's like led to a lot of destruction. I've seen pictures and videos of places I remember as a kid just not what they were. You know, it's like actual destruction and just buildings are rubble and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, just horrible. You know, it's like that's what war is terrible. Does it make me feel bad? Yes. But in the same way as like am I going to do anything about it? Not really. You know, it's like the same way as, like, you know, if I see like a dog in the street with a limp, I'm like, oh, that's sad. Anyway, I've got to go.
Each their own story, but I hope this question is not too personal. Your primary language is Russian. Mm-hmm. Do you speak Ukrainian?
Very badly now. I used to as a kid. Essentially, like, everybody was bilingual where I grew up. Russian was the predominant language, but like when I went to school, and it was the predominant language at home. Kherson in general is just a city that's...
So your mom spoke to you in Russian, not Ukrainian?
Yeah, she still does.
Okay.
You're like, it's just the language we spoke at home. You know, it's the language she studied. She was born and raised in the Soviet Union, so she did everything in Russian, but she also spoke Ukrainian. So in my school, I was the first year of students to study in Ukrainian. Obviously, Ukraine had gained independence a few years before. So I was reading and writing in Ukrainian, and I was one of the better students because my grandparents, especially my mom's side, they spoke in, it's like a combination, it's called surzhik in Russian or Ukrainian, but it's a combination of the two. So like one sentence would start in Ukrainian and end in Russian and another
sentence. A pinyin version.
Yeah, yeah, basically, yeah.
So you kind of have a little bit of understanding of Ukrainian.
No, I have a good understanding.
Good understanding.
It. But it's just like, again, at 11, I spoke both fluently. It was fine. But once we moved over here, I only really speak Russian at home. Like I said, I don't really have many Eastern European friends at home because we only spoke Russian. It's only Russian that I speak now.
And the Russian is the one with the strong Ukrainian and a little bit of English accent. Yeah, yeah. Say a Ukrainian TV or radio want to interview you in Ukrainian.
No.
Are you able to do it?
No, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen to the point where I've had negative interactions here with Ukrainians, not shows, just in general, where I'll meet them and they'll be like, oh, you're from Ukraine. It's like, yeah, because their English is not great. So they'll want to speak in Ukrainian and I'll answer them in Russian. And they'll be like, why are you speaking Russian? Yeah. I was like, well, but they can hear and they can speak fluent Russian. And I'm like, well, my Ukrainian's not that good, you know, so I can't speak it. I understand like 75% of what they're saying. And then they'll be like, oh, this is a shame. You should speak Ukrainian. I'm like, mate, we can speak English. I can speak English. Or like, you can speak to me in Ukrainian and I'll answer you in English, whatever. And then they get upset because they're like, you should represent your country. It's like, no, I shouldn't. My mom's a doctor and she's had patients come in who want to speak to her in Ukrainian, but she's practiced medicine in Russian or English. And she's like, I'm not practicing medicine in Ukrainian. She's like, I'm not as comfortable in it. I don't know certain terms because, you know, when the term becomes very specific, you don't necessarily know the term unless you're working in that language. So she's like, look, I can do it in Russian. I can do it in English. Pick. And they're like, oh, well, let's do it in Russian because my English is not so good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fine.
I ask this question because identity is already a very complex issue coupled with nationality, nationalism. And now you throw in a warfare. Because what I read from the news is that after the invasion, it actually solidified Ukrainian status. Because in the past, east of Ukraine, Russian was the predominant language.
Yes.
A lot of people are more fluent Russian. They speak a certain level of Ukrainian, but it's more Russian speaking. And the further west you go, it's a different picture.
Yes.
But now after the invasion, there's a very clear effort by Russian speaking Ukrainians to prioritize or learn Ukrainian and use it as their first language. So now the original, it should be objective neutral question of language is now tainted with picking a side in politics in the middle of the war.
Yeah. It's literally a political signifier, right? So after the first invasion, so I was traveling to Kyiv regularly before the pandemic because my grandma was there. And it's like, I would speak Russian to everybody that I would interact with. And it was perfectly fine. Everyone in Kyiv that I would interact with, I would speak in Russian with. And in some places, they were obliged to respond to me in Ukrainian by like the work policy. And some people would just respond in Ukrainian because there was already a divide, right? From the first invasion, there was already a divide and it became a thing. Now, like, I'd probably rather speak English. Because
if you speak Russian, you are seen as the enemy.
You're not seen as the enemy, but you're seen as somebody who's not necessarily patriotic and who's not doing their effort. Like when I was in Kyiv before the pandemic, the comedy shows were in Russian. Now they're in Ukrainian. All the adverts for the comedy shows and stuff like that, they were in Russian. Now they're all in Ukrainian. But by the way, before it made sense for them to be in Russian, right? It's like running a comedy night in Wales. You're going to run it in English rather than Welsh because English is a much bigger market. That's just it, you know? So
yeah, I know, but I have more sympathy for language in the minority position. But I think commercially, you're right, yes.
Yeah, but that's what we're talking about, like commercial. And it's, that's what I'm saying, this is before. Whereas now, running a show in Russian in Kyiv, I'd imagine is next to impossible.
It's a poison pill.
Yeah, like why would you do it? And also because before, again, all of Russia's 150 million people, whatever it is, they were the potential market for those comics in Kyiv. And they could travel without a visa, you know, you just go.
So it's more commercially viable to develop your material in Russian.
Yeah, in a language that like just a larger chunk of the world's population understands.
Yeah.
But now, one, that market's completely closed. Two, even in Kyiv, the situation is not such that you would be open to practicing it in Russian. So it's like, fine, move on. That's just what it is. But for me, unless I perform in English, I can't perform in Kyiv because I'm not performing in Ukrainian because I just don't know it well enough. It'll look like a toddler trying to talk on stage.
I don't know how to follow up on that.
You don't have to. I don't know.
No. I don't have a smooth segue. I do want to admit something. You've been correcting me, but I kept saying it. I want to apologize to the audience because I've been reading the news. So as a Taiwanese person, I quite often blame the Western media for their oblivion. They neglect what's really happening until it gets into real shit and suddenly we're in the news. So not a lot of people care about and they downplay the importance of the initial invasion.
Mm.
They just like, oh, Crimea happened. What can we do? And then, oh, the separatists are fighting in East Ukraine and they really raise an eyebrow. And suddenly the second invasion came and that became the invasion. And throughout this interview, my terminology was almost aligned with the Western media's attitude. I feel so ashamed. I feel so bad about that. I want to apologize for it. But I hope Dimitri's response to me also give you a bit nuances. Like in the complex world, in a really messy war, there's always a lot of nuances and different angles you don't see.
Yeah. And also like my knowledge is just, you know, maybe like a level or two deeper than yours, but only because of personal involvement. If you move that over to another world incident, I don't know. Because like, why would I? I don't need to spend my life.
Oh my God, I feel like I did a Russian invasion special. I feel bad. Because I invited you as a comedian. In the end, I treat you as the box-ticking person on BBC Morning. I feel bad.
No, because also, see, the thing about it is that you shouldn't feel bad because it's just an easier conversation to have than certain other ones because you're like, there's a certain degree of interest. There's also like, oh, this person actually knows about that. By the way, I don't know much about that. I've spoken to English people who make me feel ashamed how much they know versus how much I know. Oh man, this person's invested a lot more of their time than I have. And it's also amazing because people like that, they're generally quite smart people. And it's so funny to me when they've done way more reading and understand the situation in way more detail than I do, but then they'll defer to my position. And I'm like, why are you deferring to my position? You've clearly done this a lot more than I have. They're like, no, but like you're local. And I'm like, listen, you've read and you understand a lot more. The fact that you're deferring to my knowledge is almost kind of, I don't want to say racist because that's not the word, but it's like they're kind of only, they're giving me credibility over their knowledge and their work because I'm from a place. But it's like, I haven't done the work that you've done. I don't know. Cool, I know a few personal stories, but like everything, you know, personal stories are personal stories.
So it's not likely you'll ever have a comedy special like My Perilous Journey Out of Ukraine.
Mate, if I do that special, just come and slap me. If I ever do that special, that's me selling out completely. Yeah. Because it's just not my thing. Listen, some people have had perilous journeys. I have a friend who had to like run across the border being chased by border patrol and stuff like that, you know, and it was tense. And he got out because otherwise, you know, they make you serve in the army that he doesn't necessarily believe in. So it's like, yeah, there's people that have done that. But also it's like, it's just you taking a thing that's happening in a world level and monetizing it for your own personal gain. I call that war profiteering. And listen, I'm engaged in it as well, but at least I know I am. I'm not.
And this year, I'll be upfront and honest about it.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know, I didn't ask you to be on only because the second invasion.
Yeah.
It's because I never knew you well. And it's always a bit weird to approach someone, say, would you mind doing this when you don't know someone that well? But you've always been on my list. I can dig out my old spreadsheet to prove that. And prior to recording today, I was not quite sure how to treat this. I have a lot of sympathy, but I also don't want a victim porn. I think it wouldn't do Ukraine justice. And what I learned from the few press clips I've read is that comedy show goes on. Because this war goes on, people have to find a way to keep on living. It was a surprise, but it makes sense to me. Oh, people still try to, you have to pretend there is a normalcy that's going on in the world. You have to resume the daily activity. People still go to comedy shows. So we put in some jokes here. We talk about what you feel like in your capacity. You left that early. You just say, this is what we can from our perspective. And the war is still there. We're not denying it. But we also hope that when there's something we can laugh about, hopefully, the a little bit of laughter can give you a little bit of release, however short they are.
Yes, it's true. And life does go on. It's still going on in Ukraine. It cracked me up. I was talking to my friend who'd lost his job because the industry he works in wasn't working, obviously because of the war. And I was like, do you still have to pay rent? He'd lived in Kyiv. He's like, of course. If anything is going up. And I'm like, how can you be in a war zone and still have to pay rent? It was boggling my mind. And obviously women got out because they're not subject to conscription. So I know girls that like have got out and are living in the UK, but they'll go back to Kyiv for like 2-3 weeks at a time to see their friends and family to catch up and stuff. And you go like, oh yeah, it's weird, but like people will just go back because it's not like an active war.
Maybe it's
war
not
zone.
Weird. We're just too used to a war confined to a Hollywood movie of 90 to 120 minutes, right?
Yes, yeah.
But the real war goes on for a very long time.
Yes, and you can still visit those places and kind of be okay there, but also have a small possibility of a thing blowing up. That, you know, the building that you're in being bombed. And you're just like, this. It's intense, but it's life. And if it continues over there, why am I going to be stopping my life over here and being like, no, I can't. Like,
no, I know. So before we go today, I just want to end with a context. So if you are curious about Dimitri, I'm just going to warn you, some of his clips, the jokes can be a bit dark, but very funny.
I think you've picked that up during this podcast.
Yes, just to double down on that, Dimitri jokes about Ukraine will do really well at Paralympics next time. So this is kind of the comedy angle he takes in his comedy world, and I hope that everything makes sense to you. How do people find you on social? Do you bother? Do you want people to find you on social?
Listen, I know. I will be putting more effort in, but yeah.
This is not accusing you. I am quite lazy myself, but yes, how do people find you on social media?
Yeah, just Dimitri Bakanov on Instagram. That's the place.
Do you see he anglicized his name again?
That's how I say it. That's how I say it so people understand it. Dude,
it's Bakanov. Like baklava in November.
I didn't understand any of that explanation, but fair enough.
No, Bakanov. That's how people remember how to spell it.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Okay, cool. Fair enough. That threw me completely. But mate, it's like, dude, you have to say it in the way of the country that you're in. Do you know, it's like, mate, if I meet somebody and they're like, oh, my name is like, and it'll be some weird niche Indian name or even Chinese name when they don't adopt George as their name. And they're like, it's a niche name. And I'm like, mate, say it in a way that's easier for me to understand. Because I'm here. This is what my ears
I do.
To.
I already do. And they drop half of the syllables. I'm like, there's no end to these English speaking people. All right. On that note, we're going to go right now. If you like this episode, please subscribe or give us some review and follow me and Dimitri on social media, and I look forward to talking to you, not seeing you. I won't be able to see you. I would look forward to talking to you next time. Have a good day. Bye.